Today is Tuesday, May the 14th, and this is Natalie Packle interviewing Bernice Fishman for the Gratz College Holocaust Archive.
Bernice, can you tell me where you were born and when, and a little bit about your family?
I was born in Brunky, Poland in 1934. My family, my grandfather, my father's father, was a cantor in this small town, a small Jewish community, mostly German Jews. It was in Poland, but the area kept getting to be either German or Polish, so most of the Jews spoke German and Polish, not as much Yiddish as in Poland proper. Let's see what I can tell you. My father had a clothing store. And both my parents worked in the store. And I didn't go to school because I was too young. Oh, I did go to school, that's right, I remember. I went to nursery school, Catholic nursery school, because there was no other nursery school in town. And let's see, that's all.
What was the year that you were born?
1934.
Do you remember what your life was like before the war?
Well, my grandparents lived a block away, and I know that I could run to their house. It was close by. I had my father's brother, had four daughters who were teenagers at the time, and I was only about four, and I remember them. That was very pleasant. My parents and I used to go bicycle riding in the countryside. I guess it was on weekends. On Shabbat, Shabbat was Shabbat. I mean, we did not... We observed the holidays. We happened to live next door to the synagogue. That's my founder's memory. Our dining room window looked out on the synagogue yard. And I would climb through the window, because we were on the ground floor, and play in the synagogue yard. So I had access where the yard had a fence around it and other people couldn't go in. I remember my grandfather in the synagogue praying. I remember before Pesach, my grandfather taking me to a matzah factory that he had to put a stamp on that it was kosher, and people making the matzahs by hand. It's a pleasant memory.
Would you like me to start
My father had a sister that lived in the next town, and she had two boys. They were my friends. And they all died. There's nobody left. I used to take the train to visit my grandmother, also in a town distant from us. I really don't remember the town right now. I remember that. That was very pleasant. My father was away a lot. He traveled for the business, and my mother was in the store.
Did your family experience any anti-Semitism? Do you remember any open anti-Semitism before the Hitler period? I know you were so very young.
Not before the Hitler period. It seems that my father was born and raised in this small town, and he went to school with all the Polish kids. Well, he really went to school and didn't go to school. What happened was he went to school and he had to wear a kippah because his father was a cantor. So his father would already let him go without a kippah, but because he was a cantor, his children had to wear kippah. Well, it wasn't allowed in school. So after a very short time, my father did not go to school. My grandfather hired a tutor for his two boys. My father had a brother who was quite a few years older, maybe 8 years older. And that's how they learned. My father didn't really like to study, and his brother would be the scholar. His brother became a rabbi. Never practiced, but he was ordained. But my father would be in the house while his brother was listening to the teacher or studying, and it had turned out that when you would open any page of the Torah and read the first sentence, and my father would finish it by heart. any patron. I've tried it with him.
What a fine mind he had. Yeah.
And he spoke five languages, and he could read and write in these languages. And he had a mind as far as math was concerned. I mean, you gave him any number of numbers, and he would tell you the interest on it and the amounts, and, you know, it, almost like a computer. He did have it very fine.
Do you remember any organizations other than the synagogue before the Hitler period that your family belonged to? Were there any groups, any social groups?
Well, I think my mother, when she was a girl, her brothers belonged to a Zionist organization, mm-hmm. Hashomer Hatzair, and she remembered, she was young then too. I mean, then she got married, but anyway, she did go to some meetings with her brothers, but no, I didn't belong to any organizations.
Of course, you were young. Right.
I was not even five. So,
did any men in your family serve in the National Army or any National Army?
Well, my mother's brother served in the Russian. Well, no, let's see. It was the Russian Army. That's right. Yeah.
It was the Russian Army.
No, he served in the Polish army. Then he went. He went to Russia, and the Polish army was dissolved in Russia.
Right.
They were captured, dissolved, and then he was a prisoner in Siberia for a while, and then he fought with the Russian army against the Germans, and we met him after the war in the Russian army.
Do you know how many people, how many Jewish people lived in your town?
No, not really.
I was going to then ask you whether it was a highly organized Jewish community. You have mentioned that there certainly was a synagogue.
Yes, it was an organized Jewish community. They baked matzahs on Passover. They baked matzahs. I think it was for themselves, and maybe they did some exporting. And also, my grandfather used to visit the prisons. The prison, I guess there was one prison in town. There were, at one time, there were as many as four Jewish prisoners in the prison, and my grandfather would be the one to visit them. I don't remember the rabbi at all. I just remember my grandfather. So it must have been a rabbi, too.
If there was a kahila in your town, and I know, again, you were very young, how did you or your family view it, or did it represent the people in the city?
Yes, I mean, there only was one synagogue, and it was an Orthodox synagogue, and whatever organizations the people had, whatever, I know there was a home for the aged. They had, I remember very vaguely, mm-hmm. and there was always money being collected for different Jewish causes, and we always had a blue box in our house, Keren Kayem Adli Israel. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there definitely was an active Jewish community.
Was there a mikveh next to it, usually?
Yes, there was a mikveh.
The
mikveh
in the old age home synagogue.
I don't remember going to them. I do remember going to the river. I don't know why I don't remember. I guess people could go to the river, too, if you immerse yourself in the river. Mm-hmm. A flowing body of water.
Sure.
So I remember that.
What happened to you and your family during the weeks following the German invasion? What is your recollection?
Well, the first recollection really I have is before the German invasion. Some weeks prior to the German invasion, the Polish people would hold marches and assemblies and try to extol the people to fight the Germans. But also, right before the war, there were signs, and there were people walked in front of my parents' store, "Do not buy from the Jew." Some weeks before the war that happened. And my father had just as many customers as before because they all went through the back door and shopped at my parents' store. So it didn't hurt them in that way, but there were people in front of the store telling not to buy from the Jew. And immediately before the war started, maybe a week before, many Jews did leave town and went further into Poland because they figured that Germany will not invade that part of Poland. So my mother and and I left Vronky and traveled to Stashov, which is a town where her mother had relatives, an aunt. In fact, her whole family went to Stashov because we figured there the Germans will not get to. And my father stayed with the store, and my mother and I traveled to Stashov. We traveled for 2 days by train and bus, and the German overtook us, I think, the first day. I mean, they were faster than the train. And they defeated the Polish army within a number of hours. And it took us a few weeks to reach Stashov, which should have taken a day and a half, because there were bombing on the way, and we were captured by the Germans and told us to go to Palestine. Of course, you know, like they kept telling you, go to Palestine. There was no way of getting to Palestine. And my mother, at that time, my mother was pregnant with my brother. But anyway, that's part of the story.
Did you receive any help of any kind during this time from non-Jews?
I remember this trip very vaguely. But yes, I'm sure we did. But in many cases, these people didn't know we were Jewish either. We were just people that were stranded in the countryside, and the woman with a child, and we were treated well. But they might not have known we were Jewish.
And once you reached Stashov, what happened then?
Well, then we had family, and all my mother's parents and her brothers and sisters and their families gathered in that town, in Stashov. And we had an apartment. We lived with my grandparents. And my father was in some kind of business. He always managed to make a living. And at that time, there was already an order. As soon as we came, we were not allowed to go to school, because I never started school when we arrived in Stashov. Jewish children were not allowed to go to school. So the Jews organized teacher and some children, and met in different people's houses, and one child would always be outside and guarding against the Germans, because the punishment was terrible. I mean, maybe they would even shoot you. It was very scary. I remember being outside watching for the German, being very scared, and that was at the age of 5 or 6. We knew what was going on. It wasn't, you know.
Do you remember anything about a ghetto?
Yes. Within about a year after we got to Stashov, I guess we got to Stashov in 1939, because that's when the war started. Probably in about 1940, the ghetto was organized, and all the Jews had to live on this certain street. It was at the end of town, and was next to a river, in fact. And that was considered the ghetto. And we had an apartment. We lived with our grandparents. And we weren't allowed to leave the ghetto. Now, before we moved to the ghetto, we lived in where the Poles lived, of course. And I remember I was taking piano lessons. And when we moved to the ghetto was surrounded by a barbed wire fence. But there were always holes in the barbed wire fence. It wasn't enforced that carefully yet, even though the punishment was terrible if you left the ghetto. But once a week, I used to go over the fence and take a piano lesson. I cannot believe this now, because after all, you had to take piano lessons.
That's a beautiful part of it, if you can say beautiful. It shows where the emphasis was.
Yes, the Jews always emphasize learning, yes.
And music and books and...
Right.
Most of the community,
Jewish community was in the ghetto, yes. I had some Polish friends outside of the ghetto that I even would visit after my piano lesson and play with them, you know. But their parents would give me some food. But then I went back to the ghetto. I mean, that's where I lived.
Do you remember refugees from other cities being in that ghetto as well?
No, this was... At that time, it was still very orderly, and we lived very peacefully in that ghetto in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. And then what happened? Was the ghetto closed,
Well, first of all, there were many things that happened people were not, you really didn't have jobs. I mean, there was no way of making a living.
Would you continue?
Yeah. My father was a very charming man. He could talk anybody into anything. And somehow he got a job sweeping the streets outside the ghetto. Because at that time, most of the transportation was by horse and buggies. There were a lot of horses. So there was horse manure on the streets. And my father was sweeping the streets. And that was a great honor. That was, I mean, wonderful. So he had a certain salary. And he would take me with him once in a while. I was very proud of my father having a job. I remember this Polish farmer passing by every day to the market with his goods, and he was always give vegetables to my father, especially tomatoes. We ate tomatoes. It was such a treat because you couldn't get any fresh things. He worked there for a while. Then he worked in a horsehair factory where they made brushes from the tails of the horses. They made brushes for the German officers to polish their shoes, and I suppose to comb their hair, horsehair brushes. And that was good too, because that's at that time they started shipping people off to camps. And if you had a job, you didn't get shipped off. And my father had a job. And then there was a rumor that the ghetto would be confiscated. And my parents found a Polish, some farmers a few miles away. I think it either was 6 kilometers or 6 miles. It was a little distance from where we live in the countryside. And these people agreed to take me and my brother. So a few weeks before the ghetto was confiscated, my brother and I left to this Polish family. And but the story my mother and my mother and father had made a in their cellar, there was a trapdoor in the kitchen, and there was they would go down into the cellar, and they had an extra neighbor who would say that they left if anybody came in, and they would be in that trap door. Anyway, the ghetto was evacuated. All the people were taken to the square and shot. Whoever escaped, escaped. Some people ran to the river and they drowned. That was the stories that my mother was told. My parents didn't see it. They could hear the shots. And my different relatives scattered to different places before it happened. Many people didn't scatter before it happened. I don't know, would you like to stop for a second?
Sure.
Because I have different things right now. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's right.
When the ghetto was evacuated, my parents were still living in that house in the cellar, and that person, next door neighbor named Maria, would bring them food, and she guarded them. What happened, I lived with this family in the woods, and my brother and I would visit my parents once in a while. And I remember something it was wintertime. And I was walking through the woods to visit my parents, and I knew that nobody was allowed to see me. And from a distance, there was a hill and a lake, and I could see children playing and sliding down on sleds. And I wanted to join them, but I couldn't. And I knew that I wouldn't, I mean, that I absolutely could not join them. And I would visit my parents like this. I remember one particular time, I got to the ghetto, near a few blocks from my parents' house, and from a distance I saw a policeman, and he saw me. It was dusk, just getting dark, and he started running toward me, because there was nobody in the ghetto, and if you saw somebody in the ghetto, that means that person was Jewish. And I ran around the block and ran and ran, and somehow I lost him. And I visited my parents, And I remember my mother telling me that they will be leaving that place and I can't visit them anymore. And I started crying and I wanted to stay with them. I didn't want to leave. I wanted to be with my mother. I was seven or eight. And I remember my mother slapped me. And then I left. And I think, I guess her slap helped. She told me, you will die. You have to leave. You cannot be with us. And she screamed. And that's it. Then I didn't see them for a while after that. I went back to where I was with people. These people were very nice to us. They were very poor. And they had a number of children. We lived with them for a while. It was a matter of months, really, maybe 6 months. My brother was 4 years younger than I was. So he must have been four or three. I don't think he was four. He was younger than that. And we lived in that town. Excuse me. And then somehow my grandmother came and stayed with us, my mother's mother, the grandmother. And my grandfather was in a concentration camp already. My father was on the concentration camp. My mother was hidden.
Do you know which concentration camp?
Skarżysko.
Okay, well, that, all right, we'll put on the form.
Okay.
Yeah.
And my mother was still hidden with that Maria, with that neighbor. And my grandmother was with us. At that time, edict came out, an order from the Germans, that they decided they will stop killing the Jews. They have a town where they let all the Jews come to that town, and they get free passage to that town. If they are caught, they are not going to be shot, and they can live in that town for the rest of their lives. They'll be fine. I don't remember the name of that town. Maybe I can find out. And my grandmother and I left these people's houses because it wasn't good anymore. I think people knew that we were Jewish and decided to go to that town. On the way, we were caught by the Polish police and put in prison. While we were in prison, that town was evacuated. That town, all the people were killed in that town.
Prison or that?
No,
okay.
I really don't. My grandmother and my brother and I were put in prison. That was a Polish prison. It was not a German prison. I mean, that was the Polish police. They had their prison. We were in the prison, probably altogether we were in prison for a week. But while we were there, the Polish, about every night after the second night, one of the policemen would come in and said, tonight you will be shot. So every day my grandmother would fast because they would tell us the next day we will shoot you. So I asked her why she's fasting, and she told me that a Jew, before they die, they should fast because of their sins. I remember wanting to fast too, but she said I was too young. I didn't have to fast. Anyway, one evening, there was snow on the ground. The policeman came in and said, we're going out now and we'll shoot you. And my grandmother started putting a coat on me and he started laughing. He said, why are you putting a coat on her? We'll shoot her anyway. You don't have to worry about her catching a cold. I remember being completely calm, not scared at all, not worried at all. And my grandmother was completely calm. And of course, my brother was too young. I don't think he knew. But the only thing I remember was, the only thought I had was that we'll be standing next to that tree and they'll shoot us and the snow will turn red. That's the only thing I was thinking about, and I was completely not upset or worried about it. Anyway, the policemen left. They didn't take us outside. And it seems that somebody told my parents where we were. Now my father must have escaped again because he was with my mother. And somebody told them where we were. They paid off somebody off, and a carriage, a horse and buggy, and a farmer came and picked us up. from that prison. I think what the Polish police was doing, they wanted money. And they were threatening, and that's what it was. My mother remembers that while we were in prison, she received a letter from my grandmother. I guess maybe that's how my parents knew where we were. My grandmother sent a letter with somebody, paid somebody though. And my mother said she kept the letter through the whole war. It was such a beautiful letter. It said, don't worry about us. You're young. You have other children. If the tree is still there, it will grow new branches. It will grow new leaves. And my mother treasured that letter. She lost it. She was a very wise woman. Get another tissue. If I may regress again.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Is that
anything
right?
That comes
yeah.
to your mind.
I just want to tell you about a celebration of holidays. Even in the ghetto, we would have a Pesach Seder. And I remember opening the door for Elijah, and a neighbor coming in. It was a funny thing. I remember Sukkot, where we had a sukkah, and all our neighbors and friends would come and eat in the sukkah. We ate every single meal in the sukkah. I remember my mother baking shalach manot for our friends and neighbors, and I would walk through the whole town and deliver goodies for our friends. By the time, and I would get things in return to take home. I remember eating half of it before I would even get home. I remember my father's parents' death. They were in the Warsaw Ghetto. And my father was notified some way that his parents were shot. And I remember him crying. It's very difficult to see your parents cry. And at that time, my father said, if my sainted parents were shot, there's no more God. And he was still a Jew after that. I mean, even in America, he was still a Jew. He went to synagogue. He gave charity. But he changed after his parents died. He would like to ask me something.
Sure,
I don't
sure.
remember what to say. Well, I think I do remember. After we were brought with this carriage to my parents, and they were hidden, Polish people were hiding them someplace in the countryside again. And so that was my brother, myself, my grandmother, and my parents, and my aunt, and her son, and a cousin, I guess, and my aunt's husband. And they decided, this whole group decided, that we can't hide out together. There were too many of us. And especially there were three children. There were two boys that were about 4 years old, and I was about seven. Now, the boys were not four. The boys were three or less. And so they decided, they contacted some people in a small village called Ogrodzenie in Poland. These people were from my grandparents' town of Sosnowiec. These people worked for my grandparents' store. The man was a bookkeeper. Now, he was against the Germans, too. He was a Polish patriot against the Germans. And when the Germans invaded Poland, he left for a small village because he was an intellectual and he was worried that they might shoot him or send him to a concentration camp. So he lived in this small village with his family. And somehow my grandmother contacted this man, Kuchaty, Karl Kuchaty was his name. And he and his wife, and they had a child. And he said that he would take care of many of us, I mean, try to save as many of us as he possibly could. So it was decided that my Uncle Nathan, my mother's brother, my Aunt Manya, her son Jack, my brother Leon, Label, and Leonek in Polish, and myself, would go to these people and live on Polish papers. I suppose somebody made Polish papers for us already, false papers. So we all got into a wagon with hay in it. And we were told that if somebody comes from a distance, some of us would hide in the hay. And the others, I guess, that had papers would talk to whoever, you know, and say they were going to visit friends. And it took us all day to, in the carriage, to get to this little town of Ogrodzenie. I remember on the way, we stopped a few times on the way, and it must have been springtime already, because flowers were growing on the roadside. And I remember picking up a little flower and thinking to myself, as long as this flower is alive, that's I'll be alive and probably get there. But again, there was no fear.
And we continue the interview with Bernice Fishman.
Travel to the to Ogrodzenie. Ogrodzenie means surrounded, really. It was a little town of 15 houses surrounded by a forest. These people lived in a two-room house. Everybody else had a one-room house. It really was a three-room house, I remember. That's right. One was, we had stored things in it. I don't know what they stored in. But anyway, these people, they must have been in their late 20s, or maybe even younger than that. I remember the woman was so pretty. The man had some kind of infection in his leg, and it was always pussy, and he was always sick. He was lame. He was always sick, and he couldn't work. And I suppose some money that we brought helped the whole family. And they had a two-year-old child, maybe younger than two. They were very kind. They were very nice people. My uncle Nathan, who was at the time, maybe he wasn't quite 20, could have been 19 or 18. To me, he seemed quite old, but he couldn't have been 20 yet. He joined the Polish partisans, and that was a good way of protecting us to a degree, and also to bring in food for the family, because the partisans would raid farms, I guess, or they would get donations from farmers because they were fighting the Germans. Of course, it turns out that the partisans were also fighting, killing Jews too, where they could. My uncle did not tell them he was a Jew. They did not know that. If they knew that, we would be dead. So my uncle would stay away for weeks at a time, and then he would come and bring food, and I guess that's how we lived. My aunt also, my aunt, I guess, helped in the house. I remember we made soap in the house. I suppose maybe there was some money we made out of the soap. Remember, one of the rooms was used as a slaughterhouse for animals. I guess maybe they rented out a room, and that was another way of making money. I remember one incident. My aunt was making soap in the front room, in the main room of the house. There was a front door and then just the room. And she was making soap in this large kettle. And my cousin, who was maybe three at the time, came running into the room, full speed, fell into the kettle. His whole arm and his whole side of his body was with this hot soap. I don't know how he lived through it. They went to doctors and things, and he has terrible scars on his arm and his a side of his body, but his head did not fall in, otherwise he would have been dead. He lived through that. Then one day, there was a story, the man we stayed with, Carl, had a brother who came to visit him, and it seems the brother got drunk in the in the village, and he started telling everybody that his brother's keeping Jews. And from then on, things became uncomfortable, and we thought that the Polacks knew that we were Jewish, that some people knew, or some people suspected. The story was that that my aunt was, I mean, the story was that she was my aunt, and my parents were in Germany on forced labor. And my brother and I were her niece and nephew, and we were staying with these people, the Kuchatis, who were friends of ours. And of course, we were all good Catholics and went to church every Sunday. And anyway, one time there was a scare that the Germans were coming into that village, and we all ran into the woods. We stayed, there was a little house in the woods where people we knew lived in, and they took us in. We stayed there for a while. At that time, the Kuchatis got worried, and they moved into town. They moved into Kelsey. They moved out of that Ogrodzenie, and we were there alone without them. And we felt very insecure. It seems they would not have helped us any if the Germans came to get us, but it seemed to be secure if they were there. But to regress another, to tell another story, it's just a nice story. How nice these people were. First of all, they risked their life to save our lives. But another thing, my uncle brought an orange once from, somehow they got an orange. Poland doesn't have oranges, but somehow the partisans had oranges. My uncle had one orange. He brought it and he gave it to Karl Kuchata, to the man, who was such a sick man anyway. And I remember him peeling that orange and calling us all in to his room, and we were around his bed. And he gave us each a piece of orange. I'll never forget that. The orange looked like the sun. It was so beautiful, and it tasted so good. And even then, when I was just a little child, I thought it was such a noble thing for that man to do. I remember another thing. I was always hungry. We never had enough food to eat. And so one time the partisans brought brought barrels and barrels of cream, and they stored it in a barn right next to our house. And they had a guard outside of the barn guarding this cream. Anyway, I remember sneaking in through the back, through a loose board in the barn. And I drank two cups of cream. I remember another time, they had, the people we stayed with somehow had a can of condensed milk. And they opened the can, they used a little bit of it, and they put it on the windowsill, no? And when I got to it, it had worms swimming, and I pushed away the worms, and I drank some of the milk. I remember working very hard. My aunt must have been doing some work to make money. She used to go to the market. And I remember carrying the water from the well with a yoke, I guess it's called, across the shoulders with two buckets. That did not worry me. In fact, it was fun going to the well. I remember walking barefoot in the snow because I didn't have any shoes. That wasn't fun. Anyway, my brother became sick. He was sick. I don't know how sick he was or what it was. But my aunt was afraid to take him to the doctor because he was circumcised. So she didn't take him to the doctor. And I remember he was sick. And I wasn't standing next to him and died. It was maybe four. In fact, while he was dying, I ran to get this priest. I don't know why. I guess I thought it would look good. I don't know what I thought. I put a candle in his hand. He was pushing it away. Oh, God. My father was right. That was no God. Anyway, we had a funeral. We walked to the, following the coffin, to the Polish cemetery. And I didn't cry. I did not cry when he died. I didn't cry at the funeral. I didn't cry at the cemetery. Yeah, I have a machine. Well, but it will keep ringing, I guess.
Whatever you wish.
Anyway, I remember not crying. I remember specifically having this heavy stone on my chest. I remember this great heaviness, but never crying. Anyway, within days of this funeral, I became very sick. I was very, very sick, and everybody started, and they had a conference. I guess the people must have come to the funeral, our friends, because they had a conference with my aunt and my uncle. And they were worried about losing another child. Of course, I wasn't a boy. So they put me in a wagon and they drove to the hospital. And it was a risk even putting me in a hospital. What if I say something that I was Jewish and then everybody gets killed? Maybe that's why they had a conference first. But they did not want to, I remember them not wanting to lose another child. And I went to the hospital. It was a Catholic hospital with nuns, it's only a hospital. And I remember being treated very well. They were very nice to me. The story was again that my parents were away and I was living with an aunt. I remember one nun especially calling me her little orphan. And I used to think to myself, why is she calling me a little orphan? The story is that my parents are in Germany working, so she must know I'm Jewish. The whole time I was under that impression, but I might have been wrong. I had whooping cough, scarlet fever, and diphtheria. I had everything. I was in the hospital for months. Of course, at that time, you stayed in the hospital longer. I remember them coming in. I remember a nun kneeling at my bed and praying. I had a growth on the side of my neck that they lanced. I remember it was giant. It was bigger than a grapefruit. And I remember holding the receptacle while they cut it and lanced it. But no, it did not hurt. I guess I was anesthetized, but it was, I guess, local anesthesia. My aunt would come to visit me, I remember, and bring food. She was not allowed in the room because I was in the contagious ward. But I remember her coming. And then I came back to the village. I remember one instant, I guess my brother was dead already. You know, when my brother was alive, it was a big burden on me. I had to take care of him. It was a lesser burden when he was dead.
Because there's a child taking care of a child. Indeed, it was a burden.
I remember the gypsies came into town one day. A whole group of gypsies. They would go from village to village and tell fortunes, and that's how they made their money, I guess. People said they also stole, but anyway, the Germans didn't hate them as much as they hated the Jews. They would send the gypsies to camps. They would imprison them, but they wouldn't shoot them outright like they did the Jews. So the gypsies came to town, and the Polacks would never tell the Germans the gypsies were hiding here or there. They would tell where the Jews were hiding, even though they hated the gypsies, because the gypsies stole. The Jews never stole, but they hated the Jews worse. And the gypsies came to town, and the whole village gathered around them, and the gypsies told fortunes. Anyway, all of a sudden, the gypsy stopped telling fortune, pointed at me, and said, she is Jewish, and then continued telling the fortune. And from then on, we were worried even more than everybody knew we were Jewish. Now, I don't know how, you know, I always thought, how did the gypsy know I was Jewish? You know, now that I'm talking about it, I think somebody probably told him. Maybe there was a good way of some of the Poles advertising that we were Jewish. I'm just thinking of it now. Anyway, the war was coming to an end. The Russians were coming. We heard all kinds of reports that the Russians were coming, and that was good. So all of a sudden, there was a war in our village. I mean, I remember the Germans coming into the village, and there was bombs flying, or bullets flying across the village. It was a tiny village, so you could actually see the bullets flying across the village. In different times, there would be, people would know that the war, that the shooting started, and we would run into bunkers. So I suppose I probably wasn't washed for a long time, wasn't cared, no one cared for me, no one took care of me. Of course, everybody was in terrible straits. And I developed a sores on my head. And the sores got so bad that I couldn't comb my hair anymore because there was pus. My hair was completely covered with pus. And it almost was like one cap, like I had a hat on, complete pus and sores. So I don't know who told, I don't think anyone told me. I think I myself decided that I have to go to the hospital. Now this was middle of 1944, so I was 10. So I walked to the hospital. It was about 10 kilometers, 8 kilometers. I already knew where the hospital was. And they took me in. I told them I was an orphan. This time I told them I was an orphan. And I remember the nurse putting me into a bathtub. And first she cut my hair with scissors. And then they actually scalped me. They took everything off my head. And to regress a little bit, I remember walking to the hospital and I wore a scarf on my head. You could not take the scarf off because it was glued to my head with the pus. And they put ointment on it. And I was in the hospital again for a long time. And while I was in the hospital, the Russians took over. And the Germans left. And the war, I guess, was over. I remember it was so bad, even in the hospital, as far as food was concerned, we would get black bread, and I remember there were white worms in the black bread. And we would just push away the worms and eat the bread. I remember the bedding being gray on the beds. But somehow my parents found out, my parents knew what town I was in, and they went to see the Polish people to find out where I was. My parents already knew that my brother was dead. My uncle had sent a messenger to them some time before, and somehow they knew that my brother was dead. So they wanted to see about their only child. My parents were some 100 kilometers away in another town with the Russians. And my father stole a bicycle. And he bicycled, I guess, 50 miles to Kielce to No, the, we were in Ogrodzenie, which is a little town.
In the hospital?
Right, in the hospital. And Kielce was the big city where the hospital was. And that's where I was. So my father got to Kielce. And found where these people live and went to see them. And he says when he went to see Mr. Kuchaty, Mr. Kuchaty cried when he told him about my brother dying. And he told him where I was. So my father visited me in the hospital. And I can't describe how beautiful it was to see my father. I did not know who he was.
Had he changed?
No, he was just so beautiful. It was somebody smiling and somebody that I could be safe with. And he told me stories. He always told me stories. And he stood there at my hospital bed telling me stories. And how warm and bright and nice everything will be. And he told me he was my father. I knew he was somebody. I didn't know he was my father. And I didn't have any hair when he came to see me at all. I was completely bald. And it was amazing, I'm told, that my hair grew back at all.
It's pretty hair.
Thank you. But at that time I was... Excuse me. And so somehow, I don't know how, my mother got there too. And she was already pregnant with my sister. She was wearing a Russian, green Russian army coat, a quilted army coat, and Russian boots. And she was so beautiful. And she had to tell me she was my mother, too. She looked familiar.
How long had it actually been that
time? I guess it was 1942 to 1945. And at 42, I was 8. And 45 was... I guess almost 11. Yeah. And I guess the way she was dressed. And so I guess I stayed in the hospital for another while because I wasn't well enough to leave yet. But then I left the hospital. And my parents rented an apartment in Kielce. Now the war officially was over. I remember they rented the apartment had 5 rooms. And there was some kind of kitchen and bathroom. 5 Jewish families lived in the apartment with the 5 rooms. So it was 4 Jewish families and my parents and myself. And to us, that was a great luxury. I mean, having a room for the family. And I remember it was on a high floor. Maybe it was the 4th floor. I mean, there was no elevator, so 4th floor would be a high floor. And at that time, my sister was about to be born. And there was a Polish doctor that befriended my parents, and he offered to deliver the baby that was going to come in his hospital, and for no charge. And my mother refused because she says, "I'll have the baby, and they'll kill the baby." So we arranged for a midwife, but the problem was in case she goes into labor at night. There was a curfew. The Russians were guarding the streets, and they shoot first, and then they ask you questions. So it was decided that I will get the midwife. I was 10, 45, or 11. And I remember my mother went to labor at night, and I went to get the midwife. I was stopped a few times at gunpoint, but they wouldn't shoot a child, so I brought them in. I remember not being afraid of the guns or the Russians. I was afraid of the boogeyman in the little park I had to go through, the shadows I was afraid of. That's what happens when you're a child.
You're back to being a child.
Yeah, I'm not time. Afraid of the guns. I remember all the screams while I was waiting for my mother to deliver that baby. I was in the hallway.
Yeah.
Terrible, terrible. I'll never forget that. Then my mother was in bed for a long time, and my father had to make a living again. And I took care. I remember washing the diapers by hand, taking care of my mother, cooking, taking care of the baby. And my father, the way he made a living. I remember when my parents first picked me up, the only thing possession they had was a black dress, a black lady's dress. I don't know where they got that black lady's dress. And I remember there was a long discussion, should my mother have the dress or should my father start a business with that dress? So they decided that he should start a business with a dress. Now, this is a child hearing what parents are talking about. That's what it sounded like to me. And somehow my father got a bottle of liquor, sold the dress, and bought a bottle of whiskey. And he would water the whiskey down and sell it to the Russian soldiers. And then somehow he got a watch, and he sold the watch, and he got some money. And that's how he supported us, from the black dress.
Did you have any education at that time? Was there any schooling?
Myself? Oh, no. We were in that, while we were in the Ogrodzenie during the war,
yeah.
I did not go to school because we always found excuses why I didn't go to school. I was sick, I was too young, it was too far. Some of the children went to school. There was a school in a nearby village that the children went to. I did not go because it was dangerous. You know, but there was a danger in it. The more people would know me, the worse it would be. Mm-hmm. They would ask questions. Don't forget, all the people in the village, they lived there for centuries. Everybody knew everybody, as we were newcomers. Mm-hmm. So even, and everybody was suspicious. You know, somebody's Jewish, you know. So it was open, season for Jews.
Excuse me, Bernice. Was there any contact at this time from your original town, with the family, the friends from your original town?
No.
No. Mm-hmm. Or did you have any communication with the outside world, your parents? Do you remember anything about radio or newspapers?
I myself don't remember radio or newspapers. I remember my parents' stories about the farmer that hid them came in and said to them that he heard on the English radio, on the British Broadcasting Company, I guess, the Polish Hour that he would listen to, saying, kill the Jews wherever you can find them. He showed my parents leaflets that he got from the Polish underground to kill the Jews wherever you can find them. We want a Poland clean of Jews when Poland is a country again. He came to my parents and he cried, why am I risking my life and saving you? You will be killed anyway after the war. And the only thing that really saved my parents, first of all, because he was a wonderful man, and second of all, he went to his priest and he finally told the priest that he is Jews and what should I do with them? Should I kill them? And the priest told him, keep them. And the terrible thing about this Jews being killed is the fact that if all the priests would have told their people to keep Jews, every Jew would have been saved, because the Polish people were so religious that anything the priest told them, they would have done. Their greeting, the greeting in the, especially in the small towns and villages in Poland, is may the name of Christ be blessed forever. And then the answer is forever and ever, amen. So they lived and breathed Jesus. If somebody told them that Jesus wants the Jews to live, the Jews would have lived. That's the irony of it.
We know about the Vatican. And,
right, if the Pope would have said, save the Jews would have been saved. It only took one sentence, it would have taken. It wouldn't have taken much.
Some of these questions don't pertain to you because you were too young. Selections of death camps, camp medical clinic. Anything about the guards and their treatment to the prisoners and the couples and daily rations in camp, and children in camp, and religious services in camp, secret prayers.
I remember. Before my Holy Communion. That's regressing again.
That's good. That's okay.
I was a certain age. I guess I was 8 or 9, and I didn't have to go to school, but I would have to go to catechism class, and I would have to have my first communion. Otherwise, they would really get suspicious. So I remember before that was decided, Emilia Cucciati, that's the lady, she took me into a room, and she sprinkled some water on me and said, christened me, that's the word I was looking for, because she said, I said, why are you doing it? She said, because I'm afraid of committing a sin to bring an unchristened child to church for communion and for catechism. So she was absolved from sin in doing that. And so I went to catechism for a year, and I was one of the good students. We walked twice a week. I and a group of my friends from the village walked to church, and we would have classes, catechism classes. It's really a small booklet that one has questions and answers. What is the church? This church is the mother of religion, and many questions, maybe more than 100 questions probably. And you just learn all that by heart. It's a,
and there were other Jewish children with you?
No. There, Jews did not exist at that time. The people that went with me were the children of the people that lived in that village for hundreds of years. No. Then when I did not know of any Jews any place, especially in that village, there were only 15 houses. So we had a test, I passed the test, and then it was time for the first communion, and my aunt had to scramble to get me a dress and flowers, and there was a small party. And she walked with me into town to take a picture, because that was what you had to do. You had to go into town to the photographer to get a picture taken. And we did that. I remember going to confession once a week. Probably it was a Saturday, because you had to confess the day before you had communion. And so you wouldn't have time to sin, because you're not allowed to have communion if you had any sin, if you sinned. I remember kneeling in church and thinking to myself, well, God forgive me because I'm Jewish. I mean, that was really a lot of presence of mind for a kid.
Indeed.
And at every step I knew I was Jewish, and I even at different times I would think to myself, somebody commits a crime and is sentenced to death, he committed a crime, but I didn't do anything. The only reason they are going to kill me is because I am Jewish. And that I had in my mind the whole time. I knew that. There's another story. I miss my mother. I miss my mother so much. I remember I had a button from her dress. I don't know how I had that button. And I kept it with me all through the war. Every time I looked at the button, I thought of my mother.
Do you remember anything much about the Russian treatment?
When
you were in town, you were now in this apartment.
I even remember before I came into town. I suppose the Russians already came into that village before I even went to the hospital with this cradle, disease. But it wasn't sure. They would come in, and then the Germans would come in the next day. The village changed hands a few times. I remember the Russians coming into our house and begged for bread, because the Russian army was so badly supplied that the soldiers were hungry. And I remember them not taking bread. I remember them asking. And I was, and they were so nice. They were also so beautiful when they came in, because we knew they weren't the Germans.